Thursday. C-minus 86. White House, Washington, D.C. For several hours, President Valerie Slater steadfastly resisted growing calls to issue an official comment regarding the Kerguelen bolide. Like other leaders, Slater was a strong public supporter of the GSC. But, just like those same other leaders, she hadn't missed the general feelings of resentment that had been building among her citizenry towards Chairman Godfrey's organization. As laid out in the New York Agreement, signed at the United Nations to create the GSC a year earlier, non-intervention from national leaders was a foundational principle of the truly supranational organization and was utterly required for Godfrey's position to retain the authority and credibility necessary to keep so many moving parts in check. There had never been anything like the GSC, which had already structurally consumed all former national space agencies and now exercised arm's-length control of their daily operations while setting the broader agenda and working towards total integration, and a united front among the governments of its member states was something of which they all understood the importance. Internally, many in Slater's government considered the most important result of the New York Agreement to be that China's near-term space ambitions had been halted. Few, however, had much confidence that the GSC would be around to hold back the Chinese plans for a lunar colony and Martian research base for very long. Indeed, many held tremendous skepticism that the GSC would exist in even a decade's time. Balancing the competing national agendas of the GSC's primary member states and handling truculent populist leaders from elsewhere was a difficult task, and one that few expected any willing candidate other than William Godfrey could ever prove capable of performing. And since the GSC's charter restricted any individual to only one single 5-year term as chairman, many expected that the post-Godfrey leadership contest would inevitably descend into mudslinging, which would bring to the surface all of the latent divisions that Godfrey alone could control. Only 1 year into its life, President Slater had been strongly advised to begin preparing for life after the GSC. China and Russia would already be doing the same, she was told, and the subject of a joint venture between private enterprise and the public sector was one that interested many in Washington and beyond as a way for the United States to regain top spot in an era when blowing China out of the water with public investment alone was no longer a feasible or realistic proposition. Slater had already received countless requests for a few minutes of face-to-face time since the Kerguelen bolide. With some anti-GSC interests calling for her to twist the knife into Godfrey over the lack of advance warning, and others more simply stating that the incident served as a reminder of the foolishness of ceding sovereignty over any security-related matters to a supranational organization. Of course, the security experts who made the latter point and suggested how Slater should respond to the bolide didn't need to worry about the extremely delicate politics of the GSC. And, as if it was needed, reports that an American citizen had been forcefully detained by GSC Security Corps personnel led to even greater calls for an official comment. It didn't matter that the citizen in question was Billy Kendrick, a man widely detested in political circles for his tireless attempts to find a conspiracy in everything he ever saw. All that mattered was that GSC goons had roughed up an innocent American civilian. More than any celestial event, this was the kind of thing that made it difficult for President Slater to stay quiet. A bipartisan call for condemnation ultimately pushed her into authorizing a simple statement which expressed great concern at the precedent, but took care to remind everyone that Billy Kendrick wasn't just any old tourist, and that a research base on an isolated island wasn't just any old place. The incident wasn't as black and white as a plethora of headlines were making out, Slater said, and that was an important point to bear in mind. This kind of deft touch in the face of loud voices calling for strong responses to relatively minor issues of the moment had kept Slater high in the polls and out of any major controversies over the past year, allowing her reputation to recover from the horrendous few months after the IDA leak. Slater couldn't help but notice that Dan McCarthy had also stayed quiet about Kerguelen so far, keeping himself out of the public eye as he had consistently tried to do for so long. McCarthy's willingness to move on from some unsavory incidents and keep to the fringes showed Slater that he was more mature than she'd initially believed. She also knew, however, that his sensible restraint was likely to be at least partially attributable to the influence of Emma Ford, who the president begrudgingly recognized as a potent message manager. The celestially intriguing and politically unfortunate incidents at Kerguelen, while admittedly newsworthy, weren't in themselves anything that posed much immediate difficulty for President Slater. But amid whispers that early observation data seen by American GSC personnel was already raising eyebrows about the bolide's true nature, she wasn't foolish enough to think that things weren't quickly going to get a whole lot more complicated.